This is AJ Brown, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast, brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Go to Underdog Fantasy now, sign up for Best Ball Mania, $10 million prize pool that they just announced, $2 million up top. You can get four free entries, so $100 free with 100% deposit bonus up to possibly make $2 million. Joining us today, a true legend of the industry. He's in every fantasy football Hall of Fame that there is. I'm pretty sure you know him from SiriusXM Fantasy. You've heard him here on the podcast. You've heard us on his show, him on our show. He is the legend himself in the flesh, Bob Harris, at Football Diehard of Football Diehards. Bob, so great to see you, brother. Thanks again for coming on.
Now it's good to see you again. Thank you for coming on the Sirius draft coverage and carrying me through the final post draft portion of the entertainment that evening. It was a great job.
Did you have to do the whole, like, were you there on the panel for the whole draft and then had to stick around
last couple hours and then stuck around, kind of in and out during the first portion of it, then did just the final wrap up and was fortunate to have some people on who knew what they were talking about. Like, you know, the rookie thing, I mean, you know, there is a cottage industry out there. You're a part of it. I mean, watching rookies is a business unto itself. And I don't spend a lot of time during the season watching college football because I'm watching NFL football. That's my job. So I get pretty much in a race to try to play catch up. And you know, we were talking a little bit before we went live here, you know, is this the NFL draft for fantasy purposes for me is the green flag. I mean, the race is on. Everyone has a helmet. And I know I can start doing a better job. You know, I mean, I've been reading up and following along all the people who do that kind of work, you guys and everyone, you know, telling me what to expect from these guys and what their skill sets are and how they fit with various schemes. Now we have them matched with schemes and coaching staffs, levels of competition, all these things that, you know, that we need to make our final assessments.
Yeah. And, you know, we've done those panels together at the draft for Sirius. And I know what it's like to have to go. I mean, God, that day three, that one day in Nashville, do you remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
The 7-hour behemoth. I can't imagine going through even doing half of something like that and then having to do a recap show afterwards. So yeah, man, hats off to Bob, and always love Bob's takes during the draft. And I think you're underselling yourself about the rookies. Well, you know about these guys, and the most important thing is you've been getting ready for these magazines where you've been doing the team previews, where it's right. Like you have the depth charts completely down. Can you just let the people know before we get started what's going on with the magazines and stuff? I mean, people think about Football Diehards as a website. That's where most of everything lives, of course, but you guys still, like, I find this fascinating. Every time you're on, I just want to ask you about it. Like, you guys still do the magazines.
Yeah.
So, like, how does this all work? Because with me, I'm just like, man, I feel like the minute I put out a magazine, it's like somebody's going to get hurt and my whole rankings are going to shift. So, like,
yes, all of that. So you treat it like a snapshot in time. And by the way, there's five of them, the Pro Forecast. This will be the 33rd year, consecutive year of publication for that magazine. And we've added others since. The Draft Book, very popular. Cheat Sheets magazine, also pretty popular. Football Diehards magazine. So, and then we do a second edition of the Pro Forecast to kind of help mitigate some of the things you just mentioned. But in general, I mean, you know, when you're doing articles and you're choosing articles and assigning them, you're trying to do evergreen and you're trying to focus on strategies and approaches. And I mean, you have to include players though. That's part of the deal. Right. So yes, it is a snapshot in time. And, you know, but again, this is like the 30 plus year of doing this. We've kind of learned how to, you know, work around some of those things or just, you know, you just acknowledge them. And what we've done is we use the website. And so when somebody buys a magazine, they get access to the website, right? And so it's basically an extension of the magazine, a living extension that carries you right up through all your drafts and into the season and provides you all the updated information you could possibly need. So that doesn't mean there aren't some really hairy moments right before the presses start rolling, like, you know, Julio Jones gets traded. Every year it's something, right? And I mean, yeah, you know, so. So
what do you do in those spots? Like, do you tell them, like, stop the presses? Like, do you really have to tell them, or do you just kind of let it roll?
You have a little control, but basically, you know, the presses are going to roll when the presses are going to roll. Okay. So when something happens, you have to be ready. I mean, we're printing literally a million plus magazines, and so it's a really big process, right? So, and huge scheduling issues, especially these days, you know, with workforce issues and everything. So you need to be right on point. So you hope things happen at a fortuitous time. And again, you know, over years of doing this, you get a little better and narrow down your processes. And like, it's just like anything, man, you get processes in place, you have plans and contingencies, and you know, if something's going to happen, what the task is, you got to locate that person in all the spots in the magazine, make the adjustments, do the things. And so, but it's imperfect, right? Because it is a snapshot in time. So you just kind of acknowledge that going in. And I mean, most people have come to the understanding. And, you know, I mean, I'll admit, when I first started doing this, I thought, wow, this looks like I'm getting into kind of a sunset industry. And that was in the early 90s. And yet the sun has not set. And people still love to have something in their hand, whether, you know, I'm not saying they take it to the draft or whatever. But you know, they like to sit on the beach or go on vacation or fly in a plane or whatever. They like to have something in their hand to read. And that's, you know, and we've kind of made the adjustments over time. Like I said, the, you know, the articles are more evergreen, more strategy focused, you know, things that you could, you know, you can use that aren't necessarily going to have an expiration date with the start of the season. I mean, plenty of that content in there is going to have an expiration date, but we work on that.
People have been telling me since 2010 that radio is like a sunsetting industry, you know, and it's just like, because podcasts and you know, small video content and all the rest of this, and it turns out that the radio numbers are just as good or better, you know. It's just I think people get used to, like you said, people get used to a certain format, they get used to a certain way that they just enjoy things being presented, right? And that those things die hard with people, man. Those
new ways of consumption don't necessarily mean the demise of the old ways of consumption. It just means more consumption. And I think that's what the NFL is finding, is they spread out their broadcast packages, and you know, they still have the networks, yet most of us don't watch network TV, you know, on the regular basis and things like that. So I mean, I get that. And you know, and look, at the website, we make the adjustments just like you guys have. There's more video content, more audio content, more digestible bits of content that, you know, people can grab on the fly, and you kind of offer the wide range of things. So, you know, I think the magazines for us are a big part of the picture for us, but just part of the picture.
All right. Well, we got to get some real big pieces of the picture here as far as fantasy from the great Bob Harris, if we have him on. So, now that people have gotten the addendum here about the magazine industry, we got to talk about some of these players. So
yeah,
risers and fallers. So what I did was I sent you a list last night, Bob, of players who, whenever I looked at the ADPs on Underdog prior to, because like the ADPs have been completely redone, because all of the pre-draft NFL contests were sort of considered their own entity, right? And those things are done now. And so now there's the post NFL draft stuff where they've started up Best Ball Mania and everything. And there's been like 2000 drafts, and some of the drafts that were from, you know, from February to, you know, to until the draft, when only sickos like us were kind of playing, those had, you know, those had trailing data from stuff from even before free agency, stuff certainly before the draft. And so some of these dudes, just their ADPs are wildly different. So let's just talk about some of the risers. Then we'll talk about some of the fallers. The biggest riser of all, Albert Okwuegbunam, of the Denver Broncos. If you look at where he was taken before, and of course this has everything to do with the Russell Wilson trade, Noah Fant being gone, all the rest of it. But still, his ADP, even as things shifted with people, you know, getting on board with him and beginning to realize, like, hey, this is the number one tight end in a Russell Wilson offense. His ADP for basically February through the draft was 234.3. It's now up at 128.8. That's his jump of 105.5 spots of ADP. What are your thoughts about Albert O? I mean, do you like him? Are we out over our skis on him? Because pick 120, what did I say? Pick 128. You're looking, so 10 to 11.
Right. Yes. You know, I mean, I think that's a fair price for him. You know, Greg Dulcich, we all know what he is. He's more of a seam splitter, stand up move kind of guy. Alberto plays with his hand in the dirt a lot, although he's capable of more. But I, you know, so the draft selection, we'll see how big of an impact. I don't think Dulcich makes a big change to me for Alberto, but he's like on a long list of tight end twos for me, right? That, you know, depending on how the draft plays out, I'm going to have some shares of. I'm out here doing best balls and have been, you know, since February.
Yeah.
So
we're sick people, Bob.
Right. So, you know, I mean, I have shares of him, but he's not a guy I'm actively pursuing and hasn't been and probably won't be. And, you know, Dulcich coming along doesn't necessarily, you know, throw, you know, doesn't like ruin his value, but it makes him maybe slightly less interesting among that range of number two guys. And I mean, I, you know, the list is, I mean, first of all, if I don't get Mark Andrews, I quit. I'm not playing with you. No. No, I, you know, I like to get a top guy usually at the position, but once we get outside that top 10 or so, or even 8 or 9 or somewhere in that range, you know, you're taking your chances with a lot of these guys. And I mean, I like Irv Smith. I like Tyler Higbee. Okay. David Njoku's going to have maybe more of a role this year with Austin Hooper gone. Hunter Henry, if you wanted just a touchdown dependent guy, there are a lot of players out there in that same range that I feel probably pretty much equally comfortable with. So it's more for people like me, and if you're in, you know, not in a lot of leagues, you know, I'll have, you know, triple digit best balls by the time the season rolls around. I'm going to have a share of Alberto. I'm not out there actively pursuing him. I do think it's a fair value, though. I think he is, you know, like if you plant your flag on that earlier tight end that you feel comfortable with, whoever it might be, and you want to just have, you know, a guy with some potential upside. I mean, I just think the addition of Russell Wilson alone makes you feel a little better about him. And look, he is a good, you know, the size, the build, the profile, a good red zone weapon. And so, you know, I think there should be some interest in him, but it should not be as a tight end one.
What? All right. So what about Christian Watson and Alan Lazard? Christian Watson, the rookie out of North Dakota State that got drafted by the Packers, maybe a little bit later than a lot of folks thought. Everybody, you know, all of these wide receivers going off the board so early, was 6 in the top 20 before Green Bay was even, you know, able to pick. So they have to go where they went with the Georgia. They went with Devontae Wyatt, I believe.
Yes.
They went defense, and then they come back day two, pick up Christian Watson. They also drafted Romeo Doves from Nevada a little bit later in the draft, but it's really been Alan Lazard and Christian Watson to move up from basically ADPs around 200 to now ADPs. Christian Watson's going around 127. So right over there around where we talked about Alberto, Alan Lazard's going about 136. Do you have thoughts on these guys, like with Aaron Rodgers and stuff? I don't want to get too far out over our skis, because, you know, it's like there's still, I mean, is there like going to be a Will Fuller or some kind of Jarvis Landry or Odell Beckham bomb that drops on us with these guys? Just what is your read on the Green Bay Packer wide receiver situation?
I feel like they're going to do more, and, you know, and like, even if it's Fuller, I feel like Fuller's more likely to be a Cleveland bomb because it makes perfect sense, you know, pairing him with Watson, the guy that he has the chemistry with, right? Yeah. But, you know, a lot of moving pieces there. Landry seems like he'd be a good piece, but I think Jarvis Landry's kind of defined himself at this point of career, what he is, more of a volume play than a high-end play. So, I mean, yeah, they might still make a move. I suspect they will make a move. I mean, you know, that's a pretty narrow band on the depth chart. And so, you know, I think Alan Lazard is a guy you can go back to 2 years ago, that kind of breakout game in New Orleans where he got the core muscle injury that then sidelined him subsequent to that. It was a huge game. I think, you know, there's something there if he gets the volume. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers has never had a huge affinity for the rookies. Devontae Adams, you can go back, I think he had 70 targets or 65 targets, some of them in that range his rookie year. And but also had Jordy Nelson, as, you know, there were some other people playing there, granted. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm kind of two thoughts. Like Christian Watson, I don't want to get too excited about, but I'm kind of excited about him. I like the profile. I like the height. I like the speed. Yeah, sub-4.4 speed. And then you think about, well, you know, all the buzz is Aaron Rodgers has got to be pissed. You know, this can't be a great thing for him. Well, maybe he's going to say, hey, everybody, I'm going to make it a great thing. You know, mm-hmm. You know, he could force a play. I'm still a little more comfortable in redraft with Lazard. I mean, you could, both to me are essentially free score players with a ton of upside playing with Aaron Rodgers. I think just Lazard, based on the presence there, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, he's tendered, but he hasn't signed it yet. But I think once the deadline passes,
everything's expected.
Yes. Right. It's all, but, you know, certain he'll play there. Just they got to get it finalized. So I would probably rather, you know, take a shot on Lazard. I, you know, and Watson for dynasty, I'm, you know, how long is Aaron Rodgers going to play if everything doesn't, you know, go swimmingly this year. Do we see him anymore? I don't know. So I have concerns going forward for Watson for that reason. So I do like him. I like the profile, like a lot of things about him, everything except the level of competition, you know, I think is something you could, there's something positive to say about Christian Watson, but I'd probably be more in on taking more chances on Lazard at this point.
I don't think we even need to get into Leonard Fournette about why his outlook just changed so much. But I mean, there was a big, big change as far as his, he's up 52. He's up to now 26 overall off the board.
He should have been in your top 10 all along. Why? Yeah. Once he's back and once Tom Brady's back, there's no reason not to move him up in your top 10. You look at the receiving equity he had last year, expecting that to change, you know, and I mean, Rashad White, you know, is the guy that they landed, and, you know, he's going to compete and he wants to be part of the picture. Right. And so do Gio Bernard. And I think White, the arrival of White, the only thing that does is tell me what I already knew, that Bruce Arians often speaks more glowingly of players than they deserve to be spoken of. I'm looking at you, Keyshawn Vaughn. I think Leonard Fournette, you know, as soon as I started moving him back up into my top 10, or I had him back in my top 10, as soon as he was back in Tampa, I think having that, you know, the similar role, look, he's got to stay healthy. So does everybody. I don't draft out of fear of injury. I hear a lot of buzz out there. Oh, he's not going to make it through the year. Okay. So he's not. So I have to have a plan in place. Last year, you know, maybe you were fortunate enough to have picked up Rashad Penny, who ran for 200 more yards than every other back in the NFL down the stretch. I mean, that's how fantasy football works. The guys you draft early don't always make it the whole way. You have to be able to adjust, adapt, and overcome those moves. But going in with a piece of that offense that's the Fournette size piece, I'm very happy with that.
One other guy in a similar situation before we talk about some fallers, James Conner was a riser because, of course, Chase Edmonds leaves. They give James Conner $7 million a year. Yep. That's going to be an offense that's going to be devoid of some of its, some of its playmakers, with DeAndre Hopkins missing some time, everything like that. And all of a sudden we're talking about James Conner in a tier wherever, you know, if you just look how many spots he's moved up versus ADP before, he's up almost 50 spots. He's being taken in the fourth round right now. And God, I believe, Bob, I mean, blink your eyes, and all of a sudden now we're talking about Ezekiel Elliott going in this same part of the draft. Let me ask you this, just for best ball. Let me just toss out some names, and then you can tell me your thoughts on Connor. But I'd just like to get some. Let me throw out some names and tell me if you prefer James Connor or the other guy, and then I can hear your thoughts on Connor. So James Connor or David Montgomery?
James Connor.
Okay, James Connor or Ezekiel Elliott?
James Connor.
Oh, okay. I guess I don't even need to ask about guys like J.K. Dobbins or
Josh. No, Connor is right. Consecutive him and Fournette, just ahead of DeAndre Swift at the tail end of my top 10.
Okay. Top 10, James Connor. Okay.
Yeah. So James Connor also in my top 10. Just, you know, we saw his work as a receiver. I mean, you know, again, I always say this, Alex, and it sounds stupid, but it needs to be said. I'm not trying to draft last year's best team, but I am trying to chase the volume in high powered offenses. And that's what he's getting. And there's no reason to believe that's dialing back. He finished very well last year. Granted, there were injuries. Understand, we go back, we have injury concerns. If people don't know by now, I am injury agnostic. I don't care, right? I'm drafting Christian McCaffrey early because I want that 30 points a game as long as it's on the field. And I understand how football works and that every single player is in line to get hurt, right? It's a physical violent sport, right? You go into the top 10 of the ADP right now, and I think the guys who have not been hurt are mostly second-year guys. It'd be Najee Harris and Jonathan Taylor. I think once you get past that, everyone has either missed some time or dealt with some injury issues over the course of their career. So, you know, at least in the running backs.
I think you're right. Even, I mean, you're right. Even looking at the wide receivers,
Cooper Kupp has dealt with injury
issues. Chubb has, and then Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson are both at least year one or
right,
year,
second year,
year so, two guys. So,
right. Yeah. So that's, you know, to me, that's something that we overplay. Like, it's just a fear in our mind. And I get why we have that fear. But the answer to that fear is roster construction. It's not drafting great players because you're scared they're going to get hurt. It's mitigating against the risk of them getting hurt, and you should do that in all cases. And if you feel like a player is risky at the high end at a certain position, then you build less risk into the rest of that position. You can have a risky, riskless roster with risky players on it, right? Because every player is at risk. So just, you know, get that out of the way there. But in Connor's case, again, you're looking for high volume players. And this is the double-edged sword of fantasy football, Alex. I need players getting high volume to succeed in this game. Also, high volume can lead to injuries because you're in line for. So you just have to be prepared to deal with that. And so, you know, in Connor's case, I'm not sure if I'm drafting a handcuff there, but you can don't necessarily need a handcuff in every case. You can just add depth at a position. And also, the waiver wire is essential in this. And I could go back and read you off the list of players dating back to, you know, 1999. I could go back to Nick Goings and Carolina. I mean, every year there's a player wins somebody a championship that nobody drafted, and that player is almost always a running back. So, you know, again, I mentioned last year Rashad Penny. I mean, we could go back over time and I could reel off one pretty much annually. So that's part of the game, but you need guys with volume to get it done. James Conner, Leonard Fournette, both, even though we know that there are risks associated with them, I think are well deserved to be in the top 10, and I'm drafting them that way. If it doesn't work out, I'm going to have mitigated the risk by having some good depth at that position.
The thing about best ball, we don't have waiver wires in best ball.
Nope.
But what we do have is in best ball mania, we have 20
deeper.
We get 20 picks. So
right. You have deeper rosters and you right. have to add depth. And that's the thing, add depth. And in best ball, I mean, handcuffing to me, getting a running back, getting a team running back is never a horrible strategy, especially if you're concerned about the high end guy.
And if you wanted to do that with Connor, you get Eno Benjamin or Keontae Ingram for absolute free at your 20th round pick. Okay. So talking about guys that are getting cheaper, over now that we have the best ball mania ADPs, again, go to Underdog Fantasy, use promo code roster, get 100% deposit bonus up to $100. Michael Carter has fallen 31 spots now. He was his ADP was at about 66. Now it's at maybe 32 spots because now it's at 98. And this obviously has to do with Breece Hall being front of mind with everybody. Sure. At that discounted price, do you have any interest in Michael Carter or are you out?
No, I'm not. I'm never out on, you know, on a back with a roll. Look, Breece Hall comes in. They didn't move up to get him the draft, and he's not the profile of a halftime or a timeshare. It's going to be a contributing role for Carter, but we've seen him in a timeshares before as a contributor in college with Javon Williams. And he was a 1,000-yard rusher in that. But one of his, you know, one of the things he does well, Carter, is he's a big play threat, right? He can break them off. I think his final year of college, he had more explosive plays, 20-plus yards. I think he had over 20 of those. So he's still capable. And if the price is right, and that's another thing about me, I am old and mean and cheap. And when the price is right, I'm not afraid to buy a player. And again, you know, best ball, it's a little different story. You're not out there and able to make the adjustments, but so you have to do it in your draft. But keep that in mind. But there's something to be said for getting a player on your roster at the right price who's going to avoid getting you a zero any given week. And I think in PPR formats, that's a fair guess for Michael Carter.
This stuff about Kadarius Toney doesn't really jive that well. I mean, do you understand why he would have fallen 23 spots? Is it just because there's been the trade rumors and the instability there? But, you know, people think like, if the Giants want to trade him, maybe there's something.
Flake factor. I think, you know, I mean, look, we'll probably forget all about that with, you know, one good showing in the preseason. Yeah. You know, I think, I mean, there's a ton of upside there, you know, I think the draft, you know, made people feel a little wonky too, you know, or at least some level of concern that maybe they have a concern about his long-term future. But I mean, you know, I don't know if Wandale Robinson, you know, moves the needle for you much, you know, in joining this offense, but, you know, kind of a similar kind of player, right? I don't want to say gadget player because that seems like rude, but, you know, just,
he's a little bit gadgety. I mean, they're both a little gadgety.
Right. So, but you could see Tony actually emerging as a wide receiver one at some point, or at least getting used in that role. And so we'll see. I mean, I think that's a little more precipitous fall than is necessary. But then again, I think if I went and looked at my shares right now, I would not have a lot of Kadarius Tony.
Here's one. What about Tyler Lockett? I mean, we've loved him for so long in fantasy, dynasty. I mean, Bob, I've been on your show talking about Tyler Lockett's Senior Bowl, you know, like it's like, and now all of a sudden we look up Tyler Lockett is going to be, let's see, how old is Tyler Lockett going to be? I probably have it right. I think he's going to be either 29 or 30.
Trade him to Green Bay before he expires.
Yeah, there we go. 30. He's going to be 30 this year. That quarterback situation just looks terrible.
Yeah, it does.
Just either going to be Drew Lock or Geno Smith. Pete Carroll last night said that they're not in the Jimmy Garoppolo or Baker Mayfield sweepstakes. They're rolling with who they got. And so to me, even as the ADP for him is really falling off from, he was at 46. Now he's being taken right around pick 67. So that's pick 6.07. To me, I just get there around Tyler Lockett, and there are just other guys I keep finding other guys I can just kind of squint and I can talk myself into.
Exactly. You're driving down the road, there's a pothole, you drive around it, right? I mean, it's not impossible. And I think, there are players who, when they fall, for me, I'll sit there, I'll say, wow, that player like sticks out. Like I have to land that player. He's in a tier now where there's nobody. In Lockett's case, I don't feel like that. I feel like there are many lanes, many avenues for me to swerve around that pothole and feel pretty good about the player I pick. So that's what I've been doing. I also probably think I have zero shares of him. I kind of feel the same about DK Metcalf in the range he's going at. He hasn't really fallen much he's a little off from last year, but hasn't fallen in response to this news, which is interesting. And maybe that's something we see closer to the start of the season where, I mean, every minute by minute tidbit, causes a fluctuation in ADP because we're like the fish, the shiny new thing comes in the water and we all go chase it real quick. So I'm surprised that I haven't seen him fall lower, but also I see a lot of players in that same range that I can pivot to. He's a great player, and you hate to not have talent exploited to the degree it can be. Seattle seems, I mean, all this is telling me is draft Kenny Walker, please. That's what everything is being signaled from Pete Carroll's, long history of wanting to run and play defense to the quarterback situation.
We filled in for Ratcliffe today on his show on the channel. I guess he's out of town. A bad week for Ratcliffe to be out of town with how much he loves talking about horse racing and stuff. People are asking,
maybe he's at the horse race.
Where are the Kentucky Derby picks? I'm like, I don't know about Kentucky Derby picks, man. I only have so much space here in this rattling around in my brain. We were talking about today. People were saying that they feel weird about taking Kenneth Walker and Dynasty, some callers. I'm just like, dude, you should be happy to be taking – you should be excited to take Kenneth Walker at the 1.02 in your Dynasty rookie draft.
Yep, I agree with that.
All right, so one final one, and I'm really interested in this. What about Amon-Ra St. Brown? He's fallen now a pretty big fall, especially considering where he was going. Because where he was going before was at 50. Now he's looking, I mean, so a fall, even it's been 14 spots to fall, but that feels kind of substantial at that point in the draft. You're talking basically a fourth, fifth round turn type of guy. Now a guy that's being taken in the sixth, it's a full round plus. Do you think it's an overreaction? Because now the Lions, they drafted Jameson Williams, but Jameson Williams is probably going to start the season on the PUP list. Do you think that Amon-Ra St. Brown's explosion onto the scene? Do you think that just had to do less with Amon-Ra St. Brown being good and more with the fact that he just didn't have any target competition? And do you think it's fair that he's fallen so much? Do you like him more in the sixth round, or do you still think that that previous price as far as ADP is correct?
Everything you just said is exactly correct. I'm a little more interested now that the price is dropping a little bit. And I'm not saying I'm St. Brown skeptical. I don't want to go that far, but that did seem like a pretty epic run there. And, TJ Hawkinson I mean, there just wasn't a lot around. And my hopes aren't high for DJ Chark. I mean, I don't know what to expect from him, but we've seen him play pretty well at times. And Josh Reynolds is still there. He has some established chemistry with Jared Goff dating back to their time in Los Angeles. I think, again, one of the keys here, not drafting last year's best team, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I wonder how sustainable that level of play was. Not that he's not a good player and going to continue to be a good player, but just I don't want to pay for the ceiling. I want to pay a little cheaper price, and I think that's where we're getting there now. He's coming down a little bit, and I'll have more shares at this price than I did at the previous price.
Okay, so there are a couple more questions that I got to ask here, Bob. I'm very mindful of your time, but one thing I need to get out is just an off-topic question. Now that you lived in Texas and New Mexico, I need to know the Mexican food. Where is it better, Texas or New Mexico?
Neither. It's better in Arizona. I was born in Tucson. The Sonoran Mexican food is what you want to have. That's the ideal.
Why is it better? I've been there. I think I've had the Mexican food.
It's fantastic.
It's like the burritos were like fried.
It's hotter. They do chimichangas there, but you can get regular burritos also. Chimichanga is the fried burrito, but it's a little hotter. I think that's been my complaint about the Texas Mexican food is it seems a little watered down to me in terms of the spice and some of the flavors. So
is it less peppers?
Yeah, they use a lot more like jalapenos, serranos, and as well in the Sonoran Mexican food. And look, like I'm also a fan of the
Wait, Bob, you kind of cut out. So you said that, I didn't hear. So you said that we use in Texas the jalapenos, serranos. What do you guys use?
You use less of that. Yeah, there's less heat in general. It's my experience. And like in New Mexico, there's a fair amount of heat with the red and the green chili. And I like all that. And, you know, but I mean, both of them, you know, pale in comparison. If you're asking me to rank them, it would be Sonoran, New Mexican, Texas, the Tex-Mex.
I didn't even ask about Arizona.
I know. I'm completely off the board.
I love it. Completely off the board. All right, great. I needed to get that from you. Let's just finish with these two. So coming out of the draft, coming out of free agency, let's not talk about the winners as far as the rookies or the losers as far as rookies, bad landing spots. Because we could talk about guys like, you know, the winners being guys, you know, it feels like, you know, Damian Pierce is a dude who obviously is getting bumped up. You know, feels like James Cook is in a really good spot in Buffalo. Some of the Christian Watson, Jalen
Drake London. I mean, the path to workload, Treylon Burks, whether they turn out to be the things we expect or not, I mean, they're good spots.
So, but I want to ask you about the veterans, the salty old dogs. Mm. That's what I want. So I want to know which veteran came out of this thing in the best spot, be that, you know, if his team drafted good players around him, or if his team didn't draft somebody that's going to come take his job, or, you know, if his team didn't go out in free agency and do something we necessarily expected. Is there one veteran that you think came out of this thing best?
I want to say just in general, I think just quarterbacks in general, I guess, a lot of quarterbacks got really good players. I want to say Marquise Brown came out as a winner.
I think
just a much better offense for him. I want to say, I know that this one maybe – I want to say A.J. Brown comes out a bit of a winner, right? I mean, just, you know, the opportunity that maybe Nick Sirianni can cobble together a passing attack that's more of a passing attack than what we saw last year, where that's not happening in Tennessee anytime soon, right? So – maybe A.J. Brown comes out a little bit ahead. The running backs we mentioned, though, Leonard Fournette and James Conner are the guys that, you know, leap to mind among the veterans just because there was no additions to their rooms, right? There are no significant additions that we expect to come in and cut in on their play. So I think those just in general, I think, you know, quarterbacks who are in places that landed receivers, whether it's Jameis Winston, whether it's Zach Wilson. I mean, there's
Jalen Hurts,
Kyler Murray, you know, prior to understanding that DeAndre Hopkins was gone. But now that we know for sure DeAndre Hopkins is getting suspended, I mean, he still wins because they went out and got him a piece. And also, you know, all the foreshadowing for Kyler Murray that, you know, it's just a reminder when we get in the moments of these times of uncertainty with players. So I'm looking at you, Deebo Samuel. You know, we see the public portion of negotiations and the frustrations and stuff, but behind the scenes, there's lots of things going on and things are hardly ever as bad behind the scenes as they are in front of the scenes. So keep that in mind. I'm hearing more about Deebo Samuel that this thing looks like it's going in a good direction again. So, you know, that's worth noting there. So I think mostly though, you know, some of these quarterbacks, even, you know, I mean, Marcus Mariota needed a weapon. He got one. Can he reclaim his, you know, his spot with a great opportunity? I don't know, but he's got a good opportunity. And they added a good piece for him to work with.
Hey, let me just ask you before the next one, what did you do with AJ Brown in your rankings? Did you actually move him up or did you leave him in the same spot?
It's pretty much I kept them the same at the moment, you know, and like I said, this is a, you're, you know, it's kind of a, it's a
wait and
it's
see.
It's a nuanced argument here, right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, we saw the Eagles early last year want to be more of a passing team, and then they realized that they were better off running the ball. I think Nick Sirianni's nature is he wants to throw more, and I think that's why, in part, why we saw this move. They just didn't have the downfield firepower. You know, it would have been great if they had, say, a Justin Jefferson or something.
Yeah. You're going to trigger the Eagles fans, man. They're tired of hearing that Jalen Reagor.
You know, look, and I, you know, it is kind of a bit of a cheap shot, but what do they have? I mean, you know, and I thought Devontae Smith actually played better than maybe I expected. I just don't view him as that true physically imposing alpha kind of receiver. Mm-hmm. I think maybe as a wide receiver too, playing alongside that dominant physical receiver that can maybe open some things up for him. And maybe his presence will open some things up for Brown that weren't open up before him, not playing with a strong receiver next to him. All due respect to Julio Jones.
Damn, man, that is a dude. I mean, for Jalen Hurts, you got Devontae Smith and AJ Brown.
Yep.
Gee whiz.
And that's Dallas, like, Goddard, if he starts catching football on a regular basis.
My God, just those one of the better wide receiver duos in the league. Okay, and here we go, Bob. You gotta let the hate flow through you. Which I know you're not a very hateful guy, man. Despite all that yelling and the music that you love to listen to, the yelling and the drum pounding and the music that you love to listen to. What about the biggest loser? I mean, which veteran just got blindsided, shellacked, knocked over by this draft or by free agency?
You know, everywhere where running backs showed up. I mean, if you liked Rashad Petty and Michael Carter, obviously they're losers. I would say, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a bit of a loser. I mean, you know, there was no big trade. There was no big acquisition. They didn't go after any of the first round guys. And you know, it sounds like he's on board with this. I feel like he's more in cahoots this year than he has been in the past. And maybe he's all fine with this, or at least he's going to, you know, act like he's all fine with this and work hard. And, you know, maybe a chip on his shoulder is something that's going to help him, and he ends up a winner. Another loser is going to be Lamar Jackson, although, you know, they have enough tight ends there to float a small battleship now. We'll see. I mean, Charlie Kolar and Isaiah Likely show up there to go along with the guys already on hand, and one of those guys being Mark Andrews, who is essentially the wide receiver one. But this, you know, so the reason I say he's a loser, though, is not just losing a weapon. We'll see what Rashad Bateman turns into. Beyond that, I don't have a lot of hope for Devin Duvernay, James Proche, maybe Duvernay. I have some dynasty shares, so I'm hopeful. But you know, what does this say? And I know there's some Robert Griffin III came out and said maybe that, you know, he wasn't a fan of Greg Roman. I think generally you're saying you're not a fan of the scheme. If you're not a fan of the scheme, then you're not a fan of Lamar Jackson. He's the scheme. That's what that offense is built around. So if your teammates don't like what you make the offense do, maybe you come out a little short in this draft. So I think he might be one of the bigger losers. Although, look, he's going to win in the end. He's getting paid pretty soon once he decides he wants to get paid. And I'm not against the way they built this team around him, and I'm not against the production I get from the players involved in that scheme. So, you know, maybe this is more of an individual thing for Marquise Brown, but just, you know, losing a player of that caliber is, and I want to, you know, just acknowledge, I mean, I think my buddy Lawrence Jackson was mentioning this the other night, you know, when the year he won the MVP, I mean, Marquise Brown caught like 91 passes. It wasn't like he was like a superstar player, right? He was a good component, but right. Maybe they can get that out of some of the other pieces there. Most likely Rashad Bateman is their expectation. He's a first round pick. So maybe they can get something out of him.